Welcome to Conversations with Ask Ash. Conversations with Ask Ash focuses on people, processes, and outcomes. Ashley dives into everyday conversations around work efficiency, team productivity, and project execution. Let's get into the show. And now, your host, Ashley Schuler.
Happening, y'all? This is Ashley Schuler, host of Conversations with Ask Ash, and Marquis Murray is in the building for this episode. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited about this. Marquis and I met online through an Asana group, and I have just loved the trajectory of his life, his business, his thought process, and we have done some coffee chats together and talked, and yeah, so much words of wisdom and insights, and it's just cool to vibe with somebody on that level. And so he has such a great story, his journey of why he started his business and what sparked that idea. And then we talk a bit about leadership, and we also talk about what's ahead. And we definitely touch on many built from scratch moments and also what he's doing now. You'll get that towards the end of the episode, but man, is this a good one? It's a good one, y'all. Do all the things. Rate, review, subscribe, send me a message, all of it, because this one is one for the books. What's happening, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Ask Ash. I'm excited because we are here with the brand new season that we're a part of called Built from Scratch. And I'm excited because this is a season all about how we get down to the work, like what does it really mean to build from scratch? And so this is a great season focused on all things doing something like you've never done before. This is about preparing and embarking upon a journey where you don't have the materials in front of you. You just may have an idea. This is about beginning. And what does it look like to build something from the ground up? Maybe it's just your idea and that's all you have. And that's what you're doing to move forward. And so we're going to be walking through some stories with some of my favorite people and really going to be talking about what does it mean to build from scratch. And so I'm excited to introduce a really cool friend in the systems space. We've been talking together for a couple of years now. You know, one of the bonuses of the pandemic, you get to meet some really cool people all over the world. And so I'm here with one of the, I would say a really key expert in all things, I would say systems, processes, work management, period, which is Marquis Murray. And so he is here today, and I'd love for you, Marquis, just to talk about who you are. I'd love to just, you know, we're going to put back all the titles and stuff, and just who are you? Even in this season, who are you?
It's a good question. Thanks for having me, Ashley. I'm excited for this chat and to just talk about all the things that I love. So who am I? Yes, I am a father. I am a husband. I am a musician. I am a dog lover. For work, I am a systems architect, I'll say. I love all things systems, but I am the guy that loves things to be organized and streamlined, and I'm always looking for ways to improve it, whether it's how my team works and operates, or how I manage, you know, our personal finances at home, how we plan for the future. I believe that everything has got its place, and there's a place for everything. But yeah, I love being outside. I have two young boys, so I love hanging out with them, going to their soccer games, love going on walks and bike rides with them. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about me. So much more we can unpack there, but that's the shortest version I can probably give you.
No, this is fantastic, because one of the things I picked up on is that you said that everything has a place. And I think that is really important for many reasons. I think that we often think about our day-to-day lives, and whether it is picking up a dish rag or putting dishes away or, you know, shopping, you know, everything really has a system. And I always tell, people always ask me this question. They said, Ashley, have you always been this organized? And I, you know, I think people want a shocking thing of like, no, I was just, you know, a mess, you know, when I was younger. But really, I had the building blocks of organization. I knew that I needed to thrive with that in place. Was that the same for you in your early years of just growing up?
I would say that I was always a systems person. I mean, I've had to like conduct exercises like this, or I've thought back to where this may have all started from. And so, yeah, I think even as a kid, I was always the one that was in my room for hours, whether it was playing Lego or building model cars and planes and being just so meticulous about every little detail. I remember there was this kit that I had. I might've been 10 years old. My parents took me to the local craft store and we got this like plane, like airplane kit, where you would take what is essentially index cards and you would trace out all these many layers of these planes and you would cut them out with like a metal like crafting knife. Again, 10 years old, using a crafting knife all by myself, but like creating these like really intricate, detailed models and putting them all together. Even before that, you know, I used to love drawing when I was a kid, but you know, when it came to landscapes, they're always very like symmetrical. If I was designing like a house or something, I'd build these like elaborate underground bases on graph paper, right? Like every little block was accounted for and was all like perfect. And so, yeah, I think when it comes to systems and organization and everything being in its place, it's always kind of been with me. Even in school, like your little pencil case was always super organized. Yeah. It would really frustrate me and I couldn't, you know, work, or, you know, do well in an environment that was chaotic or was a mess. I would always have to take the time to clean it up before I started. And I'd always leave it that way as well. So yeah, I think it's always been with me and it's just translated into the work that I do now.
No, I like that a lot because what you actually hit on was, I think, is so instrumental is like, what's the thing that's going to bother you that really does, you know, I think it turns into a snowball, right? And in terms of like, all right, I see this issue. I see where this needs to be, and I'm going to go and take action. So I'd love to know too, as you started to, you know, see this as this is part of your bread and butter, your skill set, the way things are, in terms of like your entrepreneurship journey, when did this spark happen that you could use this skill set and use it in a, like a, in a, in a marketplace? When did that start to materialize?
Oh, how far do you want to go back here? I actually thought about this a few weeks ago because I often say that when I started my marketing agency in 2017, that was my first kind of go at entrepreneurship, but that's not true. Years ago, this is probably dating back to 2010, 2011, I started my own recording studio. So I went to school for business management, but then I also did a year at a recording arts school doing audio production. And so like music was always in my blood. And I was fortunate enough to get an internship right out of school. So I did the studio thing for a couple years and then I started my own. And because I had the business background and now this music background, I told myself, yeah, I'm going to start my own studio and be this big Canadian record producer and it's going to be great. It didn't work out that way. But I think in my work in building the studio, you know, I had to learn a lot of things. I had to learn how to run a business. I had to learn how to build a website. I had to learn how to market myself. I had to learn how to manage clients. And because I was doing a lot of the recording and the editing work, it really takes a person that, you know, has an organized, you know, kind of mind, because you're organizing files, you're organizing takes, you're organizing and labeling, like naming convention was so important for all the thousands of files that you would have to go through and edit and record in any given session. So I think a lot of the the things that I had learned in my childhood around organization and systematizing things, I brought into my work when I was running my own home recording studio. And so that was probably 4 years of my life doing that kind of in the evenings and on weekends. And it was my wife, we were 3 years into 3 years, 3 months into being married. And because this was taking up so much of my time, I had this going on. I was playing in a band at the time. I had my full-time job. She said, I never see you. Like, something's got to give. Like, we've been married 3 months now. So I moved out of the recording, but the work that I was doing still translated into my day job. And I was an operations manager at the time, working for a large fitness facility. So that's, I think, where like systems became really like real to me. We had scripts that we need to perfect. I was, you know, the general manager overseeing budgets and finance and looking at line items, and I'd have to train my team, and we would, you know, have these SOPs around how we make calls. And every time we did a tour in the gym, we'd ask these specific questions and we'd train on those things over and over again. And there were just so many aspects of that job and responsibilities that I had that I think because of those opportunities to learn and, you know, hone and craft my operations and systems mind, I think, you know, prepared me for the person that I am today. There's more and I can continue on, but I just want to make sure
you're so good. Yeah. We'll put a pin and we'll return back. But okay. I love this concept of having a vision. And so I think it's so important to understand a couple things. One, how do we vet the idea that we have, you know, and how do we know that it's a good idea? And sometimes you don't know until you have to get out there. But even with the vision of the recording studio, all of that led you to, you know, doubling down in your operations work. So I'm wondering with the vision of the recording studio, did that evolve until like to saying like, okay, well, maybe I can also do something else? How did you begin to work on this vision? Because it wasn't always about freedom and entrepreneurship and all the things that we sort of see and talk about when you first started with the recording studio.
Yeah, good question. Let me see if I can answer that and put this on 2X so we can get ahead in time a little bit. So yeah, I mean, the biggest learnings that I think I took from the recording studio, you know, kind of ownership was a few things. I learned how to work with contractors, right? I learned how to hire people. I learned how to vet people because I needed a logo, or I needed, you know, eventually I had to outsource some editing, things like that. I had to outsource social media. I had to learn social media before social media was like really a thing. I had to learn paid ads, you know, so I could promote my own business. I taught myself how to build WordPress websites and how to code, right? And so I took these things that I had to just learn on my own, and I started applying them, and bit by bit, as I was transitioning out of my corporate job, I decided to start offering up, you know, my freelance services. So I was offering digital marketing services, whether it would be SEO, web building, design work, social media. And so it really evolved into something where I was just kind of doing it out of necessity to something where I thought, oh, I can do this. And so again, fast forward, I was doing, you know, kind of freelance work. I ended up getting connected with a local marketing agency, and they brought me in-house, you know, to be their digital marketing manager. It was a really cool opportunity. I kind of created a job for myself by doing some just some investigation and offering some services to them. And that lasted for, you know, a year and a bit. And then I decided, hey, this is something that, you know, I think I can do on my own. And my goal was always freedom in it. I didn't know what that looked like at the time, but I realized that one, working for someone else, where they were now requiring me to be in the office 5 days a week when I have two young kids at home, you know, that was never my goal. And so I said, you know, I'm going to take control of this situation, take what I've learned, and I'm going to go start my own marketing agency. because I wanted to experience, you know, that level of freedom. I wanted to be at home with my kids. I wanted to support my wife. I wanted to be able to move around and travel and make my own decisions. And because we had, you know, 1-year-olds at the time, we have twin boys. You know, a lot of that wasn't possible just because of our stage in life, but at least I could make the decision to be there and be at home. And so one thing led to another. I started the marketing agency, and I was very fortunate that I had clients locally that wanted to work with me, and I had to start bringing on people to support the work. And I found myself in a position where I was onboarding all of these people, and I was saying the same things over and over and over again to them, and training them. And they'd come to me and ask me all these questions, and I'm like, I hired you to do this thing. You're supposed to be the expert. Why are you asking me how to do it? You know, like, I already told you how to do it when I onboarded you. And it was really out of sheer frustration that I decided one day, that's it. I'm going to go to loom.com. I'm going to record how to do it, and I'm going to give you the video. And so I started creating these videos for my marketing agency. Again, you see how the skills are evolving and translating. Mm-hmm. It was like, I needed to create these videos. And then we got, there were so many videos, I needed to figure out how to organize them now. And then the videos weren't enough because, you know, someone didn't want to watch a 5-minute video on how to do something. They just wanted to see step by step. And so then I started writing out the steps as well. And the SOP was born, you know, for my agency. And so again, I'm running this marketing agency, delivering marketing services for clients. And I'm realizing that I'm not the only one who has this problem. Right? Like my clients also need to systematize things. They also need work management tools like Asana that I was using at the time. I was using the HubSpot CRM. They also needed a way to organize their leads and all their contacts and see their online activity. And they needed a way to centralize all of this knowledge. And so I started offering at the time, along with my marketing services, what I called systems and processes. And, you know, I did that for a few years and it was great. And then there's kind of a roundabout story here, but I connected with a mentor who helped me to kind of understand what the evolution of the business would look like. I think I was searching for something deeper. You know, I was searching for purpose and meaning and figuring out now how I could really experience the freedom that I started my business to achieve. And out of that, Ditto was, you know, born as a concept. And I think it was March 2020 where things just got accelerated because marketing took a huge nosedive. My clients didn't want to spend anymore. And I had a decision to make, right? Figure out where money was going to come from, get another job or pivot into something else. And I was talking with my mentor one day, and we were just discussing the needs of a lot of the businesses that we saw around us who were now moving from physical locations to online spaces. And they needed to understand how to set up Slack and Zoom and set up tools like Asana so they could work remotely. And we're having this discussion. And I said to him, I said, Kyle, it sounds like I'm launching Ditto. And he's like, man, if you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And that was it. That was it. 8 hours later, because of, again, of my past experience, I had a WordPress website online. I emailed my marketing customers and I said, hey, we're moving to this. If you need any help, let us know. And that was the beginning of where I'm at right now.
They said, yes, please. And then they went and they went through that. That's really cool. We gotta unpack some things because I think it's really important to understand overall. And I'm in this season of this saying that says building a vision, and it's the same can be said if you want to insert building from scratch. The same principle applies. It takes faith, time, and commitment. And so what is cool about what you said in the beginning story, transitioning from the recording studio, working, figuring out what you want your life to be with your family, you guys collectively making those decisions and transitioning into offering these freelance services, is that you took what you knew, what you had.
Yeah.
You know, you had your knowledge, you had, okay, I can learn these tools. And then you went swiftly into what I think is really cool is, all right, I know I'm going to need more people, you know, in anticipation of scaling up or just handling the demand, which I think is really insightful. And I think when anyone is out there that's listening, that's you're looking to build something, whether it's your project, your program, whatever you want to call it, assessing what you need is super critical than paying for it down the line, I think. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. Yeah, I think, and you know, there's two schools of thought about this, right? Mm-hmm. There's a CEO that just wants to just hire and outsource everything. And there comes a point in your business where you need to do that. But in the beginning stages, right, to have those skills and abilities, if you are bootstrapped, right? Like I think I was able to move faster, be more agile, make decisions quicker, and like know what I wanted out of the product, know what I wanted the website to look like. I didn't have to spend hours and thousands of dollars going back and forth at a really pivotal time, right? Like 2020, no one had any money. We're all getting money from the government, right? Like I was able to just get it online and do what I needed to do. So I think, yeah, it's important to have a baseline of skills. And if you don't, be, you know, the person who can connect with the really, really smart people to do it for you.
What's happening, everyone? I hope that you are enjoying the Built from Scratch season. I love that we're unpacking this topic. What does it mean to build a program, project, an initiative, and sometimes your life from scratch? And did you know that there are three reasons typically why projects fail? Number one, poor planning. Number two, unclear goals. And number three, miscommunication. So what do we do about this? We build better workflows. Yes, we build better workflows. And in fact, I have a service that will just address this, the ClickUp and Project Management VIP Day. I'm excited about this because I get to partner with you for one day to set up workflows that are going to help you plan better projects, execute efficiently, and be able to do away with miscommunication with your team members. Oh yes, you're going to have a peace of mind. Sounds like a dream? Well, it can be your dream. So be sure to apply for the ClickUp and Project Management VIP Day. All the information is in the show notes. Back to the episode. Yeah, that's right. I think that's really good because, I mean, in even if the skill is in infancy or not as much, you know, I think there's a gentleman by the name of Jose Bennett who says you can be able to teach, if you're at a five, you can be able to teach the fours, the threes, the twos, and the ones. Mm. So oftentimes we have this thing about inadequacy. Oh, I just started, you know, so I'm not a system specialist. You know, this doesn't mean, you know, sometimes you just have to really go and try what your, you know, what your hand is. Cause I remember I was doing VIP days one time and it was Dipsado. I tried it. I thought it was good. But did I feel like I was finding my groove? I did it. And I think that's okay. You know, you go and then you go back to, you know, what you knew to do, which is, you know, bread and butter in project management and program management and taking off from there. I think what's also really key too in this story too is the people factor. Because when you went this aspect of building from scratch, oftentimes can be perceived as I didn't have anyone. And some people may not have as much in the beginning, but there was an aspect of building your network. I would like for you to talk about that. Is for this mentor, was this through school, a program, just general, just, hey, how you doing? Like, how did you get connected?
Yeah, I'll answer that in two ways. Like, I'll talk about how I found my mentor and then what I did afterwards to continue to grow my network. But yeah, my mentor was someone who I respected, was also in the marketing space. I knew him for a long time and had built and is continuing to build to this day a very successful e-commerce agency on the Shopify platform. And so I had been doing a lot of research and wanted to understand, you know, how do I build a business? How do I build an agency? And everything that I researched was like Ty Lopez or, you know, some other agency bro, I'll call him, that was like, outsource everything, you know, charge your clients, whatever, and you'll make $1 million in 30 days, you know, buy my course, buy my program. And they're all, you know, promoting this hustle culture and really talking about a life that, you know, at the time, having two young kids and, you know, having a wife that was at home and, you know, responsibilities, it wasn't realistic for me. And so I said, I need to find a mentor who understands where I'm at and is going through the same things or has gone through the same things that I'm going through. So my mentor also had twins, was also building a marketing agency. So I said, I want to know how you're doing it, because you're not the guy promoting online, you know, hustle culture up at 3 a.m. and doing 10 workouts before 10 and having all this time by yourself. No, you have young kids also. So I want to learn from you. And it was really just about reaching out. I reached out. I said, hey, Kyle, I'd love to connect. These are some of my goals. This is what I'm working on. I have some questions for you. We met for kombucha. It was my first time having kombucha rather than coffee. And we just talked, and it really evolved from there. So I would ask questions. He would do his best to respond and give me some guidance. And the best piece of advice that he gave me among so many great pieces of advice was to conceptualize your vision in a space that is removed from your day-to-day. So go away somewhere, leave your computer, leave the tech, don't look at your phone, and just bring along some paper and pen and write out your business, write out your goals, write out the offering, write out who you want it to be for, write out what it looks like in the future, write out all of that, write out your vision on paper. And so I went away for the day and I sat in this restaurant about an hour from my house. I was right on the waterfront. It was a beautiful day, just looking out at the water, music in my ears, just background music, and just writing out everything that I wanted to achieve and I wanted to become and what I wanted the business to look like. And that was really the beginning. I still have those pieces of paper today. 8.5 by 11, yellow legal paper.
Yeah.
I still have my legal pad that I carry around and I, you know, get a new one every time it gets filled up. But that was really the beginning of the vision and the dream and, you know, putting the things that I put on paper that day into action much later.
That's really cool. And I love that there's a cool thing about, you know, because I think there's a theory or a school of thought of let me find the people that are up here or, you know, 10 steps, 5 or 10 steps ahead. But then there's something so rich about the person that is in the same similar circumstances and is building, maybe they're a couple steps ahead of you, but they have a little something more. And then you're like, I need to tap into that. And I think that's really cool to do. And then also, I do want to tap into this aspect because I think it's really important when we talk about this mentor, mentee, or how you, the give and take of it all. How did you find yourself being able to add value to this mentor? Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, because that was one of the things that in my search, I understood, you know, obviously, like me being in that position now where people are asking me to coach them and mentor them, I'm like, okay, is this something I want to do? You know, what kind of commitment is this going to be like? But because I was, you know, really starting out, it didn't happen immediately because I was building my marketing agency and I offered to pay him. I offered when we went out, I would like pay for lunch, you know, and pay for kombucha the next time. So he was more than willing to meet with me so long as I applied the things that he was teaching me, right? Yeah. I think that was a benefit to him because he felt like his time was being respected. Later on, I was able to assist him and his agency in some of their Asana processes. Mm-hmm. They were integrating Asana with HubSpot. And because of my extensive knowledge, I was able to provide some consulting there as well. So I don't think I'll ever be able to like pay him back for like what the knowledge he imparted on me. But, you know, I was able to like help a little bit and support his team as well, which was really, really nice. But yeah, definitely something to consider as you are seeking out a mentor. I think it's super important.
That's good. And I like this aspect where you said the applied knowledge, you were taking action. So this is an interesting question that maybe you can walk us through, which is, you know, as Think Ditto is, you know, the momentum is building, there's consistency, right? Where did you find anything like in terms of, there's always something to improve, but was there anything that was like a gaping hole that you were like, oh, this is like the thing that I knew we'd get bigger, but we need to tackle it. Did you have any of those moments inside the business that, you know, that you could think of to share with us?
There were a lot of things wrong with Ditto. There were a lot of things wrong with Ditto. The two things that come to mind, though, that I think were mistakes and things I had to fix were, because I'm a visionary and also an integrator, I had this problem where I would go away on the weekend, you know, when I'm supposed to be resting, and I would look at all the problems that exist in the business, all the things that caused me pain that week, and I would look to fix them. And I would do that in my own little bubble. I would fix it. And then we'd come in on Monday morning and I would tell everyone about it, and it would cause chaos, right? Because people are used to doing things a certain way. That's how we had trained on it. That's what we had built systems around. And I would come in and say, actually, no, guys, this way is better. Can't you see that it's better? Right. And so there was huge learning in that, right? Like, I was the guy, and like I still was at the time, but there were these key things that I felt like it was okay for me to improve. And that was the wrong call to make. I should have always included my team. I should have always used them to make decisions, but I would kind of be my own worst enemy, where I would implement complexities that didn't need to be there. And so I think that was like the biggest hole is we needed to fix them, right? Like at the end of it, we needed to fix it. I think I just went about it the wrong way, and that caused a whole bunch of confusion with the team. And I had to kind of like backpedal and fix that and go about it the right way, right? Like forming our project team, doing our discovery, you know, resourcing the team to do the mapping and interview them to ask them what the pain points really are, what they like about the system. And so I had like over-engineered these things and, you know, had to, you know, really pull it back to then, you know, resource a team and use them. So I think, yeah, I was probably one of the biggest issues at the time, and you know, just my wanting to like move quickly, and so that was really tough for me. But I can say that at the end of that process, when I came back around, like our processes were airtight. Like everyone knew what they needed to do. Everything was documented. It was all defined. So I'm really proud of that. The second thing that I can say was a big issue is in the beginning, we didn't spend enough time figuring out capacity for the team, like true capacity for the team, and then taking the time to train them either. And so what I mean by that is capacity. I would have a full team and they would say, oh, we're busy, we don't have any time. And then I would sign a new client. And because everyone was busy, right, I'd then have to go and hire a new person, you know, or a couple people to take on a new project. And so we grew really quickly. We grew sideways, right? We weren't scaling the business because we had all this overhead now. And then a project would wrap up and we'd have people just sitting around and waiting. And so there was this like back and forth for a period where, you know, we felt like we were growing, doing really well. And then it was like, oh no, are we going to make payroll right now? And then, you know, it was up to us to kind of figure out like true capacity, like who was working on what, how long was it taking them, what's our forecast looking like for jobs coming in. And so those were like the two biggest pain points, because I think like I created this, I won't say culture, but I created this kind of like understanding that, you know, if a project was coming in, if we sold something, it just meant we had to bring someone on versus looking at the data. What was the data saying? Analyzing that and then making decisions around that data so that we could scale effectively. And so, again, that took a whole, you know, bunch of fixing. And I had to kind of backpedal, and we had to make some decisions to remove people from the team. But I think ultimately it was for the better so that we could have something that was sustainable and could grow effectively.
No, I mean, that's really insightful. And I think a couple of things I pulled from that was this aspect of it's a change management piece, right? Mm. And it's this aspect of the big part of change is the people. And so you identified that, you know, I'm coming in and fixing, because that's a lot of us. I identify with that. Like you see an issue, you just go ahead and tackle it without looking at, well, what are some of the dependencies? What's the risk? You know, who's affected? right? And then there's all these other type of long-term effects, like the undoing of what you need to do, which I think is super key as well. And then two, I think there's a point in time where there's a, and I pieced this together, I think a few months back, which was, you know, what are we rushing for? And then matching that against deadlines. And there is a difference between the two of what is deadline driven and then what is something that's being rushed, and then unpacking what that is. Did you and the team figure that stuff out too, in terms of, you know, the deadline driven? Because, you know, there's aspects where, you know, you have to get the work done, but then there's this other piece of like, what is the rush and the push of whatever the thing is that you're looking to fix? Did you guys unpack that? Yeah.
And again, that was me. I had to be reminded several times, like, Marquis, what's the rush? Like, we're doing well. Like, we have happy clients. The pipeline is full. You know, our team is utilized. What's the rush? And so it's making me sound like a terrible leader, but there was a lot of learning there, right? Like, what is the rush? Because in some cases, and I'll give you a really practical example. I would, like we all do, receive emails every day from customers, from partners, whoever it may be, from prospects. And so in response to that, I would often find myself staying up like late at night just to get everything responded to, even if I'm scheduling emails for the next day, right? Like sending out emails, making sure that everyone's responded to, it's all good. And I would put this pressure on myself to like get it done. And if it was work that needed to get done, right? And we had a deadline, we communicated to the customer, I'd make sure that the team is like working on it to get that done. But we had put in, and in the case of the email example, like I had told myself that, I mean, this wasn't true, that the people on the other end that were waiting on these emails would become upset or frustrated with me or you know, question who I am as a human, as a leader, as a CEO, as a business owner, if I wasn't on top of the emails, if I wasn't responding accordingly. And I would like give myself like anxiety over this, right? Thinking that, oh, they're saying this about me, or they're having this feeling about me. Oh, it's been 2 days and I haven't written back to them. And, you know, depending on the email context, maybe 2 days is too long, but you know, it started to affect me. And I brought that to my therapist and I said, like, I have to get back to them. Like they're upset. They're waiting on a response from me. And my therapist said, Marquis, who's telling you that? Who's telling you that they're upset and they're waiting and they need a response right now? You're setting the precedence that if you send an email to Marquis, you're getting a response back the same day. Who's to say, if you say, hey, got this, or I'll respond to you in 24 hours or 48 hours, right? Who's to say that they wouldn't be okay with that? Because what I wasn't understanding and seeing is that there were people on the other end that had a million emails in their inbox as well.
Yeah.
And they were trying to sift through and filter all of them and figure out what's priority here, right? And so I wasn't prioritizing the right things. I was telling myself that everything was urgent, right? Mm-hmm. Because I had a reputation to defend, right? And so, one practical example, but yeah, I definitely feel like there's a difference in the deadlines that we have to meet and the rushing of things. And on the client delivery side, right? If something was due, but we didn't go through the proper QA, for example, are we going to ship that, you know, without, you know, looking at it to make sure that it works and we've tested it. What's the rush, right? Mm-hmm. We're just going to get an angry customer coming back saying, or a confused customer, I should say, not angry, but, you know, coming back and saying, hey, this doesn't work. Hey, I checked this out because we missed steps. That's also, that's not acceptable. So yeah, I think there's definitely a difference. And I've just learned over the years to just provide and give those expectations to the clients around what those timelines will look like so that we're not feeling rushed.
No, I think what you said is so gold, because a key part of your great leadership, right, is that recognizing the pitfalls, but also the self-awareness to know, all right, what is it in terms behavior-wise that I need to stop? you know, because I have been in the same boat about, well, who replied to you and told you X, Y, and Z? And there's like nothing on the screen. There's nothing to tell you that. So it's that regaining of control that you had in the practice. You know, you took the practical steps to do that, which I think was so key. The communication, which is, again, that just makes or breaks any type of project, task, or circumstance too. And then I want to kind of pivot into this aspect of rebuilding and restoring. You kind of talked about a little bit about the aspect of what I've love to call, which is like blowing stuff up. And you talked a little bit about that. But even for you, as you're leading your team, you're kind of going into like the next era of Think Ditto. What parts did, you know, of the company itself, did you, in terms of like vision wise, what did you want to tear down? Like, what did you want? New clients, new services? Have you entered into that phase?
Yeah. I mean, it's November 2023. I think I'm there now. And like what I wanted Ditto to be is what I'm building right now, right? Mm-hmm. With my new consultancy. So, I mean, mm-hmm. there was a stage where I went through where like Ditto came to a point where I had a leadership team. I had an operator. I had PMs mm-hmm. that were overseeing everything. Right? I didn't have to be talking with clients, you know, anymore as regularly as I was in the past. And so the freedom that I started my business to achieve, I was realizing a lot of that. But I didn't know what to do next. I knew where I wanted it to go. I just didn't know how to get there. And so I wanted to double down in our partnerships, right? Asana was one of our key partners. I knew that I wanted to improve that partnership and grow even further with Asana. I knew that eventually we'd want to open up to new offerings, you know, whether it's doing Airtable or Monday. I knew that I wanted to improve on our ability to deliver tech and like mm-hmm. custom API solutions and really drill down. And then again, like around the customer, like we had just a wide range of different types of customers. I knew that there was something else, you know, looming behind, beneath, you know, the surface a little bit that, you know, I still had to uncover. And so I'll say this for context, but I had been talking to another agency for a couple years now, just about the similarities in our businesses. We were both in the same space, both Asana partners, and the CEO of this company. You know, we just had these kind of regular talks. And so I knew all the things that I wanted to do. I didn't know how to do it quite exactly. And so I went to this other leader and I said, hey, after we've been talking for a while, said, I'm looking for a group, like a mastermind, you know, where I can, you know, go and understand and talk to people who have done it before me and understand how, you know, I can take my business to the next level. And they said, hey, I've got this, you know, event in Mexico in October. You should come to it. There's going to be 35 entrepreneurs seasoned, you know, of various, you know, tenures, and you should come and experience it. So I said, yeah, sure. Great. I'll be there. And so I had an opportunity to go and I delivered a talk when I was there. I sat in a hot seat when I was there and I kind of just like dumped on them. I said, these are my problems. And I got a lot of great advice. I got a lot of great mm-hmm. advice on like how to do the things that I was like, I couldn't figure out how to do next. And, to my surprise, I ended up walking away with a verbal offer to acquire my company from this other CEO.
Wow. And so,
my head was spinning. I came back. I was super excited. And long story short, we ended up going through our due diligence and terms and all of that. And we agreed on something after me saying my initial no, I'm not ready to do it. But I think where it's at now, there was a period where I helped transition some things over. I mm-hmm. went solo again in March of the beginning of this year. And now what I'm working on, it's like finally I'm able to take all of the learnings from the past, you know, a couple of years from even that event in Mexico and apply it to mm-hmm. what I'm doing now. And so I'm rebuilding the team, rebuilding the business here. My vision and the mission is clearer than it's ever been, and it's going to allow me to double down on my partnerships. We are expanding to other platforms. We have a robust technical, you know, solution around customization and workflow automation. We have all of those things. And I think what the biggest differentiator between like what Ditto was and what this is we're niching down to, you know, a group of people that really need us. And the mission is really around eliminating workplace burnout. So we want to eliminate workplace burnout by empowering teams to optimize how they work. Because I think what's become clear in all of this, and I was there, like we skipped over my anxiety and burnout story, but like I was there and a lot of my team members were there. And just like my marketing customers who knew that they needed systems and processes solutions, and I started delivering for them. A lot of my customers are experiencing burnout and frustration and, you know, a lack of visibility and understanding and how they're working. And so we're working on, you know, improving how they work and thinking about the individual contributor in their seat, right? And figuring out what can we do to improve how they work so that everyone can, you know, work more seamlessly. And so our vision around this is really, you know, a world where teams are aligned around how, where, and why their work is happening. So I'm really excited for this future. And I think what I was trying to do at Ditto, I'm finally able to do now, right? Because I'm like on the other side of it. And so it took a lot of learning to get here, but I think it was all for the better.
No, that's a second gold that you dropped, because we go back to what we were saying earlier, which is vision, but also building from scratch takes faith, time, and commitment. So the thing about what you just said was, which was so crucial, is that there was a level of readiness that you had to have, right? In order to let go of what it is that you had envisioned. And then at the right time, you met the right people. Some things also, I think, sat in your spirit. You began to, you know, things started to materialize. Kind of like, it's definitely kind of like chemistry. You know, of different type of things just kind of coming together. But what was so powerful too, is that when you're talking about your own burnout story, and then this concept of, we've talked about behind the scenes about work and what do we do about it? I think what's super important is that there is a cost to disorganization. That's number one. And I think there's on two sides. There's an aspect of there's nothing in place. And then there's the other side of the coin of there's a cost to, you know, how the work is actually disorganized, you know, in such a way where, what are the tangible effects? The burnout, the confusion, the lack of communication, the missed deadlines, the missed opportunity, you know, like all of that. And so I think it's so cool to be able to craft what's being built in this particular season, right? Of solving for that. You know, and I love it. And so what are we, as we kind of into wrapping up, what are we expecting in the next maybe 90 or so days from you, or some announcements or things we should probably stay? You don't have to say it now, but we could be like, stay tuned. You know, what are we?
I don't mind sharing at all. So we're about ready to roll out the new consultancy. It's called Surface. CIRFACE. And really, like if you see the logo, you can go to surface.com. When you see the logo, it's a line. And, you know, the line is above the word itself. And, you know, the F, because it's the tallest one, is kind of peeking through. And so it's really about the hidden potential that lies below the surface of all of our systems, right? We want to tap into that, dig deep, to help your team uncover their hidden potential around how to optimize their work. The I is inverted, right? Encouraging us to think differently. Something that we see every single day, we think differently, and it looks the same, but if we just approach it differently. And so I'm really excited about that. So go check that out in the near future. And Ashley, like you'll appreciate this, but I am finally going to be releasing in the new year probably February, the Asana Mastery course.
I've been
working on it, thinking about it for a long time. It wasn't the right time to put it out when I was working on it the first time. But again, focusing in on this group of core people, and I've found that around systems, they don't need to know what the features and functions are. That's what my YouTube is for. Go to YouTube. Mm-hmm. They don't need to know this is a task. This is how you assign something to someone. They need to know how to use the tool. They need to know how to take this big empty box and make it work for them. So we're focusing on the most common use cases of the things that we've built, the most common questions that are coming through, and showing marketing leaders, ops leaders, people in the IT space, IT admins, people in sales, how to utilize a tool like Asana to improve the effectiveness and the efficiency within their teams. So I'm really pumped about that. I'm sure there'll be lots more stuff coming out, but I can't think of them right now.
Oh, this is awesome. I love to hear it. And this is going to be an exciting time in this new season for you and for the other leaders in the company. It's just going to be good. And the people need, again, I think I love this aspect of the course coming out that's really going to, I think, dig in deep, ask the most pressing questions. It's just going to be really good. Excited for the future. So Marquis, leave us with, you know, either one or two sort of pro tips. I think you've given so many already on building from scratch. And so, take us home.
I would say, don't be afraid to ask for help. You might think that you're bothering people. You might think, oh, you're going to waste their time. But I guarantee you, like, what an honor it would be if someone reached out to you today to say, hey, based on what you've done, what your expertise is, I'd love some help. I'd love to build something along the lines of what you built. So don't be afraid to ask. People are more willing to help than you think they are. And some of the biggest, best, bravest companies in the world were not built alone. They were built with people around them that supported them and gave them advice. So I would say, reach out to your network. If you don't have the network, build it. Put yourself out there, whatever it takes. Ask for help.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you so much, Marquis. And thank you all for listening to another episode of Conversations with Ask Ash. You are in the Built from Scratch season. And so we're excited. And so tune in next time. We'll talk to you soon. We'll have all the information on Marquis and his social media and where you can contact him to learn more about the great work that he's doing. Until next time, and we'll talk soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Conversations with Ask Ash. Please be sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and follow Ashley on social media at @AshleySchuler_. That's ASHLEYSHULER_.